Okay, but let's do kilayim betzitzis. Now, the question of kilayim betzitzis is both a local sugya and a broader question of asei docha lo asei. If you're interested in doing the broader question, we can do it. It is a huge, huge sugya. Asei docha lo asei has the distinction of being the longest single consecutive sugya in all of Shas. It is, in Yevamot, it is over 5 blot consecutive. Right? It just, wow. It is a very, very, very long sugya in that sense, and it has a million permutations of it. Asei docha lo asei, asei docha lo asei. What if the lo asei has an asei? What if the lo asei has kares? Does it have to be at the same time? What's called be'idna? If it is be'idna, what does be'idna mean? How be'idna does be'idna have to be? All types of fascinating, wonderful questions. It's a really good sugya, but it's also very complicated. One of its manifestations is kilayim betzitzis. So if you want to do the broader sugya, we can. If you want to do like one shear, just giving the broad strokes of that sugya, we can do that too. But let's start with the local one. So let's read the Gemara. Okay. Now, I know basically the Makar was here are Gemara Rashi and Tosfos, Gemara Rashi Tosfos in multiple different Masechta with a little bit of Rambam thrown in, but 90% of what we're talking about is Gemara Rashi and Tosfos, at least to get the basic ideas. So, let's start. Mem and Aleph. Take it away. Yeah, you. I posted yesterday's shir for those who were not there. That's where we finalized the mesh tzitzis issues.
So, can we work mesh?
You can listen to it. Tanur Rabbanan.
Tanur Rabbanan, Tzadim B'tzitzis. If you want to attach tzitzis to your cloak.
No, sadin b'tziti. So what does that mean? What type of clothing is sadin?
Linen.
Good. And tzitzit are wool. Very good. For these purposes, yeah.
Pater u'beisil says mechayem and should. Ve'alach ha'kidivrei beisil. Amar le'vezer bar tzadok ve'halakol ha'matil.
Wait, let's start here. Let's read through the Gemara once, and then we'll come back to it. Right. So we have this machloket. If you have a linen beged, what do? You put tzitzis on it. Now tzitzis, in its completeness, does it always include wool?
Yes,
because tchelet must be on wool. Tchelet must be on wool. And therefore, if you have tchelet, then you are always going to have tchelet b'tzitzit. Wool on it, and therefore if you have a linen beged and you put tzitzis on it, it will definitionally have tchelet. And Beit Shammai says potrin and behilel mechayvin. Now already that is ambiguous because
it's shatnez.
Well, thank you, it's shatnez. But
potrin doesn't mean that you can't, it just means you
correct, right? Poter normally means one is not obligated to. Right. Poter means exempt. Mechayev means, right, obligated.
Yeah.
So what does that mean? Right? Does that mean Beit Shammai thinks you can put it on? If that's not what he means, then why does he use that weird word? Shouldn't he say
it?
Correct. And who asked that question? Both Rashi and Tosfos. Right. I mean, everybody asked that question, but like I said, you don't need to get farther than Rashi and Tosfos to know that this is a problem we're going to need to answer. And the Gemara says, Halacha kedivrei Beit Hillel. And the Gemara also doesn't clarify, is this a biblical problem? Is this a rabbinic problem? We don't know.
It's not, that question's not so important then, though, right? Because if we're going by Hillel, Hayavim, then we know what that means. So then the pattern, even though it's vague,
I mean, it
in terms of Halacha.
Oh, in terms of Halacha, sure.
Like, we don't have to know what they are.
But we always want to know. We also obviously want to stand it. Okay. So, Amar Elazar Bar Tzadok. So he says, how can it be that you paskin like Beit Hillel, but we said, Kol HaMatil Tchelet B'Yerushalayim, anyone who wears Tchelet in Yerushalayim, Eino Ela Min HaMatmihin. What does that mean?
Yeah, they're like, the people will think they're like, showing off.
No, it causes shock. It is shocking. We don't do this. And it would shock, and the Gemara, what's the problem?
They're shocked.
What do you mean you're shocked? If that's the halacha.
That implies that's not
halacha. Yes, it implies that the halacha is not like Beit Hillel. So Amar Rebbe.
That they don't keep it. Doesn't mean it's not halacha.
Right, so Amar Rebbe. Im kein lama asruha. Lefi she'ein bikirin. So Rebbe says, no, the halacha is like Beit Hillel.
They're not well versed.
But even though the halacha is like Beit Hillel, again, we're going to have to figure out this Gemara. It's very strange. But something like, even though the halacha is like Beit Hillel, still they didn't put on Tchelen Yerushalayim because they were not Bikiyin, they were not experts in something, and therefore, rabbinically they prohibited. What are they not Bikiyin in? We'll see. But something about Kilayim Betitzis, or Kilayim in general. Okay. So, Amar Le Rava Barav Chana Le Rava. So Rava, the son of Chana said to Rava, I don't understand. The problem is, he said to his father, what's the problem?
Rava says to Rava?
No, Rava Bar Chana says to Rava, not to his father. Two different people. There's General Rava, and this guy, his also name was Rava, but Rava, the son of Bar Chana.
Oh my God.
Rav Chana. So he said to him, I don't understand. You're telling me the halacha is that you can or must put tchelet on the beged. And you're not going into Dirabanan because people are confused about certain halacha, which again we have to clarify, but there's a solution. What do you do when there's unclarity?
You educate.
Thank you. So what does he say? Belirmu be'asara unifaku l'shuka mefarsama milta. Get 10 people together, go out into the streets and say, this is the halacha. This is why we're doing what we're doing. This is... problem solved.
Kind of weird. Not really.
Sigmar says, no, it doesn't solve it. Why?
Because people will be even more surprised.
Yes, call us again to the Namu. If you go out and say, sorry, not announce. I take that back. Not announce. Send 10 people out to put on Tchelet Petit, put Tchelet on their baguette. And he says, no, that would shock people even more. Right, so he says, fine, don't go out and put on Tchelet Tzitzis, go out and
teach
it, which is the second thing I said, right? So religious pirka, so teach it. He says, no, Gzeira Mishum Kala Ilan. They were concerned that
they would use indigo mix it up.
Correct. The people would, and again we have to figure out what this is, but let's for the moment say one possibility is that only if you had tzitzis with Tchelet, which have to be wool, could you put it on a linen beged? But if you had wool, which was colored in Kala Ilan, in indigo, by the way, do we want to take a day and do the scientific thing of what is indigo, or half a day? Does someone want to give a chabura on it? I can send you sources if you're into the science stuff.
What is indigo?
No, what is Kala Ilan? Is it in fact indigo? I'm assuming it's indigo, but the Gemara doesn't say indigo. And this is important, because remember, one of the proofs that we had for how do we know that how do we determine whether the modern tchelet is tchelet is, well, whatever tchelet is, it looks like Kala Ilan. So the ink that we produced from the Murex trunculus looks like that of indigo, which is great proof if you think that Kala Ilan is indigo. But if Kala Ilan is an indigo, then the fact that the Murex trunculus dye looks like indigo dye proves nothing. Right? Ari Zivitovsky is a nice short summary of the scientific stuff. In the continuation of that same packet that I gave you with all the different pictures. So he also, it was put out by Petil Trelet, so they put a little piece there. So we can run through it if you want. Take 15 minutes or an hour, whatever you want. But let's get through the Gemara first. So he says, you'll put on this with indigo. And then it'll be a problem because it will not be mutter to put tchelet on it because it's not tchelet. I mean, it won't be able to use wool because it's not tchelet. So what does the Gemara say? Velo yeh ela lavan. Velo yeh ela lavan.
You only use white.
Let it be. So let's say you did dye it with indigo. At worst, what is it?
It's like a regular white string.
It's white strings. And the assumption in this line of the Gemara is that, are you allowed to have the white strings on a linen beged be wool?
Yes.
Yes. Yes, at this stage in the Gemara, that is the assumption. Good. So what does the Gemara do to reject that? But the Gemara at this point says, okay, let's say that the strings you dyed are in fact indigo, so they only have the status of lavan. Who said that lavan can't be kilayim on tzitzis. Who said that's not permitted? So what's the Gemara's answer? Reish Lakish. Right? I'll say velota say. Mutav.
Mutav. So if you mean both an ase and a los ase, that's the best. But in love, and if not, you have a ase, you have a ase, the dicha,
the yicha los ase,
and override the
whole. And this Reish Lakish says, look, the principle that you're invoking is ase do chalot ase, that a positive mitzvah override, pushes aside, however you want to interpret that, a prohibition.
Just takes priority.
So he says, however, that's only if you can't do both. So, by tchelet, on a linen beged, can you do both? No, because tchelet always wool. Tchelet always has to be in wool. So now you tell me, well, why are you wearing a linen beged to begin with? We'll come back to that question. But on a linen beged, the only way to have tchelet is with wool, and therefore with kilayim. But therefore, Reish Lakish says what? If it's white, if it's the white strings, are the white strings allowed to be wool?
Yes.
On a linen beged, according to Reish Lakish?
Oh, according to Reish Lakish?
No, because he's saying it's azay dochalosa, saying azay only dochalosa, say when there's no other way of accomplishing the goal. And therefore, the problem of the indigo, of the kalilon, is that you didn't need to do it that way. Because if it's not tchelet, according to Reish Lakish, only the strings that need to be wool can be wool on a linen beged. And that's only tchelet. But if you have fake tchelet, then they have the status of lavan. If they have the status of lavan, then they're not docho, according to Reish Lakish. Now I want to make...
They can't be wool.
And then they can't be wool. Okay. So, 2 points quickly, and before we'll get through the Gemara once, but let me throw out some points here. This point, I don't want to get into, because we've already done it. But since we're at the Gemara now, I want to highlight it. This is one of the proofs for the position of Rashi that when you don't have tchelet, how many strings do you have?
Four.
Because remember Tosfot said, how many strings did he think you were supposed to have when you didn't have tchelet?
Two.
I mean, he thinks you have two and two, and therefore he thinks when the Gemara says tchelet and ma'akavet alavan, lavan and ma'akavet tchelet, it means that if you don't have tchelet, you just don't have those strings at all. Rashi said it means that either you have four strings, of which two are white and two are blue, or you have four strings which are white. But the number is not... Right, exactly. So we argued conceptually why that was true. But one of the proofs from the Gemara that Tosfos notes that seems to support Rashi is this Gemara. Because what does the Gemara say? If you have strings that are not, that were supposed to be tchelet, and they're not, that at worst they're white, but you already have white. Right? Remember, the guy had, let's say, two white, and two which he thought were tchelet and kalah kilan.
Right.
Right? So according to Tosfos, what should it say? What should the answer have been, Daniel? Right? According to the possibility that when you don't have tchelet, you just get rid of the strings at all, what should the Gemara's question have been? If you have tchelet, well, you think it's tchelet, but in fact it's kala ilan. What's the problem? Why is that a problem of kilayim?
Because
they shouldn't be there.
Yeah.
They just shouldn't exist. Because if you don't have tchelet, you should only have two total. So now you have two extraneous strings made of kilayim, made of wool on linen. That's the problem. But that's not what the Gemara says. The Gemara says, so at worst it'll be white. So Tosfos notes that this is one of the proofs for Rashi. That when you don't have tchelet, you don't diminish the number of strings, and that's why the Gemara can say, okay, if you have two white strings, and then you have two strings that are kala ilan, worse comes to worse, you view this as all white, because you should have all white. You got that proof? Should I say it one more time?
Yes.
Okay. Rashi had said that when the Gemara says tchelet emakavet lavan, lavan emakavet tchelet, it means that if you don't have tchelet, you still maintain four strings, just all of them are white. Tosfot had said maybe it means that if tchelet emakavet lavan, that if you don't have tchelet, then you get rid of those strings entirely. So according to Tosfot, who thinks you need two and two, that means you will have two total. I mean, two folded over to two, twice to four.
Of white or of the...
Yes, of white. In a case when you don't have tchelet.
Right.
Tosfot notes... What?
The having four.
No.
No, four.
Raji thinks you have four, which is eight.
Eight.
Okay. Let's be consistent. Do you want me to talk about full strings or half strings?
Full strings.
Full strings. Okay. Rashi says you will have four. Tosa says you will have two. But Tosa said this Gemara seems to prove Rashi, because Gemara says, let's say you're wearing white strings, and on top of the white strings, you're wearing strings that you think are tchelet, but in fact, they're tkala ilan.
Can't you just say...
So now you have... One second. So now you have a problem of kilayin. And the Gemara then responds, what are you talking about? At worst, they will be like white strings. But what does that imply? That if, because now this is a case where you don't have tchelet, right? You think you have tchelet, but you don't. So the Gemara should have said, why is there a kilayin problem? Because you have two strings that should be there and two strings that shouldn't be there, and they're wool and linen. And the Gemara doesn't say that. The Gemara says, you have two strings that have the status of white. I mean, two extra strings that have the status of white. Which makes it sound like, no matter what, you always have four strings. Right?
Okay, how's that playing with the...
That is Rashi Ishita. That even without Tchelet, you have four strings.
Okay, this is a triangle that's a kilayin, and the part of the kilayin would be...
Just from the Gemara,
yeah.
The Gemara's question, which is, why don't you just consider those extra strings white? And therefore, there'll be no problem with kilayin, because they're still halachically significant. And the Gemara's answer is, yes, they're halachically significant, but it's still a problem because you didn't have to make them out of wool, and therefore, ase docha lo sase doesn't apply. That assumes that, it seems to assume that how many strings are going to be there even when you don't have tchelet? All of them. And all the Gemara is saying is they shouldn't be wool if they're not tchelet. But the Gemara is not saying they shouldn't be there. According to Tosfot, what the Gemara should have said, why can't you have kilayim without kilayim and tzitzis without tchelet? Because then the strings that are tchelet, that should have been tchelet, shouldn't be there. And therefore they're just extraneous kilayim. That's why there's no mitzvah and it's only an avera. Not because you could do it otherwise, but because they shouldn't exist. And that's why Tosfot notes that... This is a Gemara which supports Rashi's position, that the strings are still there. So then the Gemara says, V'liv dekuva, why don't you just check? Check, do a test. Figure out whether it's tchelet or kala ilan. The Gemara says, Adiski leikom v'lismuch. You're allowed to rely on these. Are you really allowed to rely on this type of test? And he says, right, meaning you're going to send it away and you're going to send it to the dyers and you're going to rely on this message, right, that you get back from the dyers that says...
You're saying you can't use the test for Tchelis after. And that's the problem.
No. So first... I skipped the line. I skipped the line. Said, check it. Alexamishum te'ima. The problem is...
Can't rely on letters.
That they will... Sorry, I skipped it. That they'll send you ones that were that weren't dyed lishma. They were dyed just to test... Just to... as they were making the colors. So the Gemara says, why don't you send a letter that says, this is good tchelet. So the Gemara says, Adiski lekum lismach, are we allowed to rely on letters? And what does the Gemara say to that? Yes, you are allowed to rely on letters. How do we know? Because I'm a Rav Ahashtra, Chameitz bepesach v'yom kippurim dechkares amchin and Adiske. How do you know when Yontif is? Originally, you had the fire. After the fire, you sent messengers. And that teaches you when Yom Kippur is, and that teaches you when Pesach is, and all those carry kares. We rely on messengers all the time. This is just a regular run-of-the-mill mitzvah. Lokol shekin, of course you can rely on messengers. So elamarava, milz amre, the itmar, bimarava, mishum rabizera, kavasi, shema yikra, sadino, betoch shalosh, vitoreno, betoro amra, tasa, velomina, asui. So the problem is as follows. There's a halacha by Titzus that we'll have to return to as well, called Ta'aseh Velo Min Ha'asui, which means that you need to tie tzitzis, and they can't be made and then tied on. So you can't make your tzitzis, like, you know, in the air, and then, or make it on, let's say, easiest way to understand it, make your tzitzis on like a little piece of fabric this big, and then take that fabric and sew that fabric onto a full beged. Or you have to make the tzitzis on the beged. If you don't, it doesn't count as tzitzis. So what are we worried about? That you will make tzitzis in an invalid way, and therefore it's not valid, so it doesn't have the heter of kilayim betzitzis, and you'll sew it on, and we're worried about that, and that's why that's what they were worried about. But specifically, they're talking about a case where it'll rip, right? And then it'll rip, and you'll retie it, but we'll come back to that sukkah a little bit. And then the Gemara gives one more possibility. Okay, we'll come back to that line. We'll come back to the end of the sugya. Okay. Let us try to understand this Gemara. There's many things we have to understand this Gemara. So, what is the Machlokes Hillel Beis Shammai? What is going on? You also need to understand that this Gemara seems to contradict the Gemara on Lamed Tet Amud Beis. Why? Because in our Gemara, the Gemara says, when are you allowed to put tchilet? When are you allowed to put wool tzitzis on a linen beged? Only for tchilet, because that's the only time that it is? That it's necessary. Right? That it's necessary. Except, what did the Gemara say in Lamed Tet Amud Beis? What was Rachva's statement? See, that was why I put it first line. I go back to the Gemara on Lamed Tet Amud Beis. What was Rachva's statement?
Where was it?
It's like halfway through the page. Okay. Remember? Chutei Tzimeh. There's Rachva, the name of Yehuda. Chutei Tzimeh potrim b'shel pishtan, b'shel pishtan potrim b'shel tzimeh. Wool exempts linen, and linen exempts wool. What does that sound like?
That you can do.
You can always do it. Not only for the tchelet, not only when it's necessary, but you can always put wool on linen. You can always put linen on wool. Right? That's what it sounds like. Especially since linen on wool, is it ever necessary to put linen on wool? Never.
What?
Never. It's never necessary to put linen on wool. It's necessary to put wool on linen if you have a linen baguette and you want tchelet. But it's never necessary to put linen on wool. So we also have a contradiction from one Amud to the next. That on Lamed Tet Amud Beis, the position of Rachva, the name of Yehuda, sounds like, is there ever a problem of tchelet in of kilayim and tzitzis? Necessary or not?
No.
No, because wool on linen on wool. And here comes Reish Lakish on Mem Amud Aleph and says, to the extent that you're allowed to put kilayim and tzitzis, it's only when it's necessary, which is only for the tchelet strings. Now there's, even within that, so there's this contradiction you have to deal with, and then there's yet another problem, which is, it's not clear. When we say that you can put tchelet strings on the tzitzis, that there are kilayim, does that mean when there is kilayim, only the kilayim strings can be tchelet? Okay, so it can be wool rather? Or maybe, once you have wool strings, which are tchelet, you can put all wool, meaning once you invoke Asi Dochalosa, say, well,
depends how you view the tzitzis.
Yes.
If it's like one whole.
Correct. Correct. This may rely on that. So these are all different questions that we need to understand here.
Talking about just the difference in terms of Derba and Derisa, and that's why they contradict each other, is that Derisa.
So the part of it is to figure out what. Now, some of this sugya is d'oraisa, some of it is d'rabbanan. We know that.
Yeah.
Right? The Gemara says that, right? There's the d'oraisa level, and then there's the gzeirot, and we got to figure out at each stage, what are they arguing about? Are they arguing about d'oraisa, are they arguing about the d'rabbanan?
Right.
Okay. Before, one thing before we look at Rashi and Tosfot here, is the Gemara here doesn't actually outline the drasha from which we know that some type of kilayim in tzitzis is mutter. Where does that come from?
That comes from the Yoma.
It's the drasha of the psukim in Kitete by the Gemara in Yevama. The pasuk is what? What's the pasuk that's in question? Which is lo tilbash shatneis gedilim dasalach. The fact that those are juxtaposed in Kitete, the mitzvah of tzitzit and the prohibition of kilayim. So the Gemara in Yevamot is building on this. And the Gemara, remember I said that this is the longest single sugya in Shas? It's this sugya. It goes from Gimel through Chet.
Jeez.
Yes. Yes, it is very long. So the Gemara there is dealing with Asi Dochalos. So the Gemara says, Time of the Kadar Rachman Alei, Allah v'achyavim achot isha miyabem et my time. Da amrino nazi ase v'dachi lo ta'ase. So Yibum is itself a case of a prohibition which has become mutter. Right? What prohibition? Yibum is what? Let's get our terms straight. Yibum is levirate marriage in English. What is it?
It's when husband dies and doesn't have any children, then the wife is required to marry his brothers if they're not married.
What if the brothers are not married? Where'd you get that? Torah allows polygamy.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
old today.
The Torah binds the wife to the brothers, and there's two ways of dealing with it, right, Daniel?
Yep.
What are the two ways of dealing with it?
You have that whole like spinning on their shoe.
Called chalitza, right? You either go with chalitza and end this. So the quasi-marriage that is automatically created is called zika. Okay. And then you have two ways out of zika. One is yibum, which is marriage.
Bia would be.
The only way this one can be consummated, d'oraisa, is through intercourse. Right? Through bia.
Yes.
Fun
fact. If the guy rapes her, it still counts.
Very fun fact. And if they want to get out of it, they do chalitza.
Yes.
The spitting and the shoe. I'm sure you've seen a chalitza shoe.
No.
You know Toronto has a shoe museum?
I just pictured it as a sandal, though.
Like a Jewish shoe museum?
No, it just has a shoe museum. But in the shoe museum, there is a chalitza shoe. I never actually to see it. But this is what everyone tells me in Toronto. Every time I talk about Yibum, they're like, hey, did you know that there's a shoe museum in Toronto which has a chalitza shoe?
A specific type of shoe? Or it could just be anything that they wear?
What?
Like, why would you want to see that? That's the real.
Isn't it just like a sandal because that's all they wore back then?
No.
It's like a specific shoe?
To be mashmir for everything, we come up with specific shoes so that we don't have to get into any problems. Yes. It didn't theoretically have to be a shoe, but that's realistically what we do. Okay.
But also, it's until there's a child involved, isn't it? Because you're doing it for a child.
No, once they have been intimate, they are now married forever. They're married.
Unless
they
get
again. Unless they get again, meaning they're married, like any other husband and wife.
Okay.
Now, what is the exception? In what case do you not have Yibum?
If the husband had children.
No. Yeah, fine.
Oh, he didn't have any siblings.
Even in a case where the deceased person had no children and had brothers, what would prevent a brother from performing Yibum on his brother who otherwise would have Yibum? If the woman is an erva to him, how could she be an erva to him? She can't be Ishish. The husband's dead.
Maybe she's his sister-in-law?
He's a Kohen.
So you could have two brothers who marry two sisters.
Oh, like great uncle.
And then there's a different, because the only erva which is waived for Yibum is Eshadach, the prohibition you're talking about, right? Normally you can't marry your brother's wife, even if they're divorced. But
in this case,
you can. In this case, you can't.
You're supposed to.
So that obviously is waived. But let's say there's another erva besides for Eshadach. that's relevant here. I mean, she's not only your brother's wife, but she's your wife's sister. So then you can't do Yibum. Now, there are other cases. There are other ways.
Like, because you can't marry two sisters.
What if he's a Kohen?
This is why the first paragraph of Yivamot is a nightmare, because there are all types of wonderful cases that are very confusing. Like, so I can get these all straight. Let's say somebody's brother marries your... Let's say the brother could be the father of the woman. Because if an uncle marries his niece, then the brother of the deceased husband, right, his daughter is also his sister-in-law. So you could fall to Yibum with your daughter.
I got absolutely none of that.
Okay, very simple. If Reuven's daughter marries his brother Shimon, then when Shimon dies, his daughter is also his sister-in-law.
Yeah, that would be...
Or his sister-in-law is also his daughter.
Awkward.
Right?
Why is it his daughter?
Because he gave...
His daughter married his brother.
Oh, I see. Okay. Wait.
Bruh.
Oh.
Yes, an uncle can marry his niece. So if an uncle marries his niece, then one's daughter is also his sister-in-law.
That is whack.
Not okay.
Okay, you think that's the hardest case in Yivamot. This is only two.
I draw.
The cases in Yivamot get even harder.
No,
like,
the one we mentioned here was fine.
There's another category called Sarat Erfa, which is what happens if a man has two wives, right? Two wives, of which one is an Erfa and the other one is not. Right? So Reuven is married... Reuven's brother Shimon dies. Shimon has two wives. Reuven and Shimon are married to sisters, but Shimon has a second wife who's not a sister. Mm-hmm. So she's the co-wife of a woman who's an Erva.
Okay.
So she also can't do Yivum to Reuven. But what if there's a third brother, and then that wife, co-wife, marries Levi, and then Levi dies, so she was Tzaret Erva in the first marriage. Can she then marry Reuven as the Tzaret Erva? That this is an actual case.
Wow.
What the?
And it keeps going like this.
Did
you catch that case? Should I try that one more time?
No, I actually understood that.
I don't know if I want to catch that.
Oh my gosh, that is...
So two brothers marry two sisters. Second brother also has another wife. That wife can't, even if Shimon dies, that wife can't marry Reuven because she's not an Erva, but she's called a Tzaret Erva. Because since Shimon's first wife can't marry Reuven because it's his sister-in-law, right? It's his wife's sister. The wife of the co-wife of the sister-in-law also can't marry Reuven, but she can marry Levi. Because Levi is not married to any problematic person. So the co-wife marries Levi, but then Levi drops dead, and now that person should now be married to, should now marry Reuven, but she can't marry Reuven because she was the co-wife of an Erva on the first marriage, even though she's not the co-wife of an Erva on the second marriage. You followed that?
I just hope he's married once
and that's it. Yeah, I all hope that that people don't die young, but it happens. I have friends who had to been through this. This is like, this happens. If you die young, Rahman al-Atlan, without children, then this happens.
It does, but most people have these different...
Less than
yeah, which is not traumatic.
I know, I'm not denying.
Do you know how traumatic that is? Because remember that chalitza usually happens with a young couple, because they don't have children. It could happen with a couple that never has children, obviously. But usually it's like a young couple, often someone who dies in war. That's when these happen a lot. I mean, you know, relatively not uncommon. And then, so you're mourning for your, you know, husband of 1 year, 2 years. You're young, it could be 20, 21, 22. And then we say, oh, okay, you're done with your grieving. Now I want you to come to Beis Din, and I want you to pull the shoe off your brother-in-law and spit at him. Like, it's a very traumatic thing. These aren't things that, like, these aren't jokes. You know, these aren't, like... You know, you don't just say, oh, I hope I get married. Yes, we all hope it doesn't happen, but it happens. Right? Okay. It's very rare that chalitza is not extremely painful. It happens. It happens, right? Bednarz told me of one case, and it happened in YU when he was there, where a chalitz of a case of like an elderly couple who had never had kids, and the husband had died and the woman had remarried the Isser, but it doesn't create mamzerut. It's Usser, but it doesn't create mamzerut. If the woman gets remarried without chalitza, it's because it's just an Isser lav, it's not considered Ishus Ish. And she already had grandkids from this new one, and then had a dream that her first husband came to her in a dream and said, you have to do chalitza be together in Shamayim. I don't know, whatever. And in the meantime, the husband had died like 50 years ago, and like, they moved on, so it was less painful. Anyways, it can happen. It can happen. But it's usually very painful.
So, yibam happens if the husband dies or if the husband or wife dies?
No, only husband.
Hmm?
Only husband. Okay. If the wife dies, the Gemara records a different custom that happened in certain communities, which was that sometimes if the wife's sister was willing, the wife's sister would marry the brother, not as Yibum, but because the best person to take care of the children is their biological aunt. This is something that actually does happen. Because the Isser of Eshet, of Achot Isha, right, of your wife's sister, is the one erva that falls away after death. You only can't marry to two sisters at the same time, but you can be married to two sisters consecutively.
But also this case is when the person already has children.
Then there's no yibum, and obviously this is not yibum. I'm saying there's a minhag Gemara records of where someone dies with children, and the sister would sometimes marry the husband to take care of her nieces and nephews, or to help take care of the family. But that's not yibum. It's different. The only reason that's possible is because there's no erva, because achot isha falls away. It only to be married to sisters at the same time. Okay, that's the background for this Gemara. Now you'll know why Asi Dochalosase appears in Yibamo, because Yibam is a classic case of this. And yes, this is why Yibamo is so hard, because at the beginning of Yibamo is all these Tsara Erva and Tsara Erva, because it gets worse, right? What if Levi had another wife?
Okay.
So now she is, right? She is the co-wife of the co-wife of the Erva on the previous marriage. That's called Tsara Erva.
Very simple. Just remind me
never to learn. No, you are chayav to learn kolaj, including Yibamot, and if it confuses the heck out of you, then too bad. Spend more time with this. Tzar, Erva, can go on forever. Depends how many siblings you have, you know?
Yeah.
And how many of them died tragic deaths. That's the problem. It's like you're learning Yibamot, and you're so wrapped up in how confused you are that you forget to take a moment and say the only way this would ever happen is if five brothers died tragically young without children. That's the only way this would happen. Like, it's not like these are very bad cases. You know, sometimes you have to like take a step out of the Gemara and say, what are we talking about? But it does, you know, unfortunately, these are not impossible.
I mean, yeah, you get the Holocaust.
You get war. It's like war. You get a bunch of brothers that go out to war. Right? These things do happen. It's not like it doesn't happen. Unfortunately, it does happen. Okay. So the Gemara says, "Time is good." So I might have thought that you could do yibum even in a case where it would entail two sisters. My time, huh? Because you could have just said, "Look, let the positive mitzvah of yibum override the prohibition of marrying your wife's sister." So Amar Damrin Asi Asi V'Dochalosase Lo Tasa Grade, the Gemara rejects it and says, the rule of Asi Dochalosase only applies by run-of-the-mill, regular lavin. But the Isser of Eshet Ach is a Lo Tasa Sheish Bo Karet. Midachire, that is a?
Not right.
Karet. Lo Tasa. It's a super Lo Tasa. Yeah.
Nice.
So the Gemara says, V'tu Lo Tasa Grade Minalan D'Dachi. How do you know the rule? How do you know that prohibitions are pushed aside by positive mitzvah to begin with? Dichtiv, the pasuk says, "Lo tilbash shatneis, don't wear shatneis." Gedilim dasalach, and then it says, "Make tzitzis." Amar Rabbi Elazar smuchim and adora minayin. And how do we know that? You learn halachot from the juxtaposition of psukim. Shneamar smuchim lad la'olam asuyim be'emet v'yashar. So we derive this halacha from a rule called smuchim. The fact that these two laws are juxtaposed to the Torah teaches us that kilayim betzitzes ase doche. Both
does that work with anything? Like, if there are two things next to each other, then they have to have a relation?
Good. So Daniel asked the right question. This is a machlokes in the Gemara. The Gemara has a machloket about whether darshan smuchen or lo darshan smuchen. Okay. So the Gemara says, some Tanaim and Amoraim thought darshan smuchen, and some said, no, juxtaposition teaches nothing. And there is a... But there is a... problem that you'll see in a moment when we get to the Rishonim, and the Gemara says, maybe Ein Darshan Smuchin in 4 out of 5 books of the Chumash. But in one book, everyone will agree of Darshan Smuchin. And what book is that?
Dvarim.
So why would you say conceptually that in 4 books of the Torah, juxtaposition is not a legitimate reason to derive a halacha, but by Dvarim it is?
Because in Dvarim, it's like a speech.
Correct. Because by Dvarim, it is a constructed speech.
Right.
Right. In 4 books, you could always say that the position who holds Ein Darshan is because that's how it came up.
Yeah.
But in Dvarim, which is Moshe's constructed speech, if they're put next to each other, there was a reason. And therefore, perhaps, you would say that B'chol HaTerukula Ein Darshan Smuchen, in Dvarim Darshan Smuchen. And Rashi there says, "Lo tilbashat neiz v'samich le'gedilim tasalach v'darshin and smuchin v'sharin kilayim v'tzitzes amasi aze v'dachi lo tase." So now let's come back to our Gemara. What is the machlokes bez Hillel and bez Shammai? So good. Tell me, Rashi, what does Rashi think the machlokes is? Why does bez Hillel say put kilayim betzitzis with tchelet, and why does Beis Shammai say don't do it? What does Rashi think? Daniel.
Rashi.
By the way, no one ever said this sugya is easy. I'm not saying it is. If you're Rashi thinking it's hard, even though it's just Gemara Shitosis, you're right. You're very right.
Rashi says you should do it.
What is the machlokes Beis Hillel Beis Shammai according to Rashi? It's the second Rashi on the page.
Basically, can we do climb both ways?
Beis Shammai potrin. Beis Shammai says, don't put on tzitzis, not tzitzis. Dilo darshinon smuchen lumishre kilayim betzitzit. Why? We'll read the rest of Rashi, but it gives you his whole shita in one line. What's his shita?
Sure.
They don't have to put tzitzis at all.
Why?
Because we.
Well, what is the machlokes bez Hillel bez Shammai according to Rashi?
Whether you're chayav to put what would otherwise be kilayim.
I mean, if phrase it slightly differently, whether it's mutter. Meaning, Rashi says, what's the machlokes bez Hillel bez Shammai? Bez Hillel says, why do you put kilayim betzitzis? The Gemara in Yevamo. Which is, this is a case of darshan smuchen, and therefore it's permitted to put kilayim betzitzis. Why does Beis Shammai say don't put kilayim betzitzis? What does he say? D'lo darshinan smuchen. Because he doesn't hold what Daniel said before. He doesn't hold the principle of smuchen. That just because something isn't juxtaposed in the Torah, that makes a difference. And therefore, Beis Hillel calls kilayim betzitzis mutter, minat Torah. He calls this a zirazakasuv of azidoch or azidoch alose. We'll get to that. And Beis Shammai calls it Shabbos. That's what he calls it. He says, this is not a mitzvah. This is just shatnez. Because I don't buy this drasha. I mean, according to Rashi, the machloket is on the level of the deoraisa. And he says, v'hai denokat lashon patur v'chiyuv v'lo nokat lashon osur matirim. But now Rashi has a problem. Because according to Rashi, what should the language have been?
Asur.
Usher, not putter, usher. Beishamai should have said, if you have kilayim betzitzis, you cannot put it on. Because I don't buy this drasha, and therefore what Beis Hillel calls a mitzvah, I call an isser of kilayim deoraisa. So Rashi says, if Beishamai and Beis Hillel are arguing min hakatzeh la katzeh, then Beis Hillel calls it mitzvah to put tchelet on. Tzitzis, even if it's pishtun, even if it's linen. And Beis Shammai says, I don't buy the notion of smuchin, and therefore this is kilayim, then he should have said, don't do it. Not, you don't have to do it, but don't do it.
Okay.
Right? We know how to say,
No. Meaning you're putter from putting kilayim, and therefore, it is kilayim and you're
good. So what does he say? V'hai denagat lashon p'tur v'chiyev lo nagat lashon olmasun matir mishum detzitzit chova hu lebeged v'apilu eno losha. So Rashi doesn't go in that direction. Rashi says something shocking, and Rashi says, you know why he says it? Because there's a machloket that we haven't seen yet. So much is in this Rashi, and we're going to have to come back to this Rashi. There's a machloket we haven't seen yet, which is tzitzit chova gavra or tzitzit chovat mana, or chovat talit. What's the machlokas? We'll see it in the Gemara, mem aleph and mem beis. What does it mean for a beged to be chayiv in tzitzis? Does it mean that you are obligated to put tzitzis on the clothing? Or does it mean that when you wear clothing with four garments, with four corners, it must have tzitzis? The Gemara says, Lamai Nafkamina, so the Gemara, as we'll see, one of its Nafkaminas is called Klei Kufsa, which is, are you obligated biblically to have tzitzis on your four-corner garment that sits in your drawer that you're not wearing? So if you say Chovas Gavra, do you have to put tzitzis on that?
No.
If you say Chovas Mana or Chovas Talis, do you have to?
Yes.
So Rashi says, Beis Shammai clearly holds, this Gemara is according to the Shita that what? Chovas
mana,
chovas talis. And therefore, why didn't he say usher? Because he thinks that when are you obligated to put tzitzis on a beged, even if it sits in your drawer? Is there an isser kilayim in your drawer?
No.
No. And therefore, why didn't he say usher? You're right. If you're wearing the tzitzis, so Beis Shammai would say usher. But the chiddush of Beis Shammai is that he holds chovas mana, that you're obligated to put tzitzis on your four-cornered garment, even if it's going to sit in your drawer, you're never going to wear it. But there's no iser kilayim there. But nevertheless, since if you would wear it, there'd be an iser of kilayim, that negates the obligation to put tzitzis, to put tchelet on, which is wool. So why did he use the lashon of patur? Because what he means is that you don't have to put tchelet on the tzitzis in your drawer, even though you're not violating kilayim now, since if you would violate kilayim, so when you're not wearing it, you are chayev to have tzitzis on that beged, but you're not chayev to put tchelet on the beged. So Rashi, to justify his position, had to make two fantastic moves. One is that the machlokes Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai is deoraisa. Are you or are you not Doresh Smuchin? And then Rashi says, but wait a second, according to this, Beis Shammai thinks that it's not that I don't have to put Kilayim Betzitzis. It's called Kilayim. So then why in God's name would the Gemara use the language poter, right, exempt, rather than usser? Avoid this like the plague. Answer. Beis Shammai, or at least this Gemara, is going according to the Shita of Tzitzis Chovas Mana. That tzitzit is not an obligation that devolves on you when you wear it alone, but it also, or maybe exclusively, devolves on the clothing that if you have a four-cornered garment, you must put tzitzit on it. And there, you could have beged with kilayim sitting in your drawer. So you might have thought that if you have a linen four-cornered toga, which you never plan on wearing, because why the heck would you wear a toga? But you inherited it from someone, so it's sitting in your drawer for sentimental reasons, and it's four corners, and it's made of linen, a linen toga, that you might have said, well, I have no intent of wearing it, so there's no problem of putting tchelet on it, because I'm not going to violate kilayim. Beis Shammai comes and says, yeah, but you don't have to. Even though you do have to put tzitzis on it, you don't have to put tchelet on it because it would be kilayim, and kilayim v'tzitzis is patur, even in a case where it's not usur. That's Rashi's very, very ambitious read of this Gemara. Is that clear? Is it actually? You can say no. I understand that it's complicated.
I think so.
Yes?
He said it's okay if you say no. I said on the fence.
No, they talk to us, not here.
Okay, one more time. Right? He makes two points. First of all, he thinks that the machlokas is, right, is the araisa. Meaning, as follows, that the Torah puts shatnez next to tzitzis, right? Which, according to Beis Hillel, means that it's mutter, right? Kilayim, Bitsitsis is mutter. Beis Shammai says, no smuchim, right? We don't care about juxtaposition, and therefore, not only is this not, right, this is just usher, this is called shatnez. Now Rashi has a problem, because this is the language he should have used, which is kilayim mitzitzis is usur. But it's not the language he used. The language he used is patur, which means you don't have to, but theoretically you could. You just don't have to. What does that mean? Didn't you say that it's usur? It's kilayim. So he said there's a different machlokas, which is, what is a chiyuv of tzitzis? Is it kolas mana or kolas tablas? Meaning, is it that only if I plan on wearing a four-cornered garment, I have to put tzitzis on it? Or I have to put tzitzis on any four-cornered garment, even if it's sitting in my drawer. This sheet is going like the sheet of Chovas Mana, meaning even if it sits in my drawer, I need tzitzis on it. But do I violate kilayim while it's in my drawer?
No.
So therefore, you might have thought that if I'm going to wear it, so then in a Hanami, Beit Shammai would say, if I'm going to wear it, are you allowed to put kilayim? No, usur. But I might have thought that if it's going to sit in my drawer, where according to this sheet in the Gemara, I'm chayav to put tzitzis on it, I might have said, yes, I'm chayav to put tzitzis, but I'm... But I also am chayav to put tchelet, because since I'm not going to wear it, there's no problem with kilayim, mimela, I have to put tchelet, even though it's kilayim, because I'm not going to wear it. Kamash malan, that even while it's sitting in your drawer where there's no concern of kilayim, you don't have to put tchelet on it, because if you wore it, then you wouldn't be allowed to put tchelet. Even when I'm not wearing it, I don't have to. That's why he says the language used is patur, and he says v'isur v'hetar nami batal. You have a cave into Beit Shammai patur. Have a lu kilayim shelo b'makom mitzvah relay mishum kilayim. And he says now Rashi makes a third point. Okay, are we clear on point one and two? Now he makes a third move, and he says, do you want to know why, conceptually, Beis Shammai says that kilayim is not docha tzitzis? Do you know why, conceptually? What is Rashi's third move? Because he holds chovas mana. Meaning, since according to Beis Shammai, the mitzvah is to have four-cornered garments with strings on them, wherever they may be, so then the mitzvah of tzitzis, is it intrinsically in any way connected to kilayim? No, because I could fulfill the mitzvah of tzitzis without ever violating kilayim, even if I put tchelet on it. That's why Beis Shammai thinks that it's usur to wear it, because I can be mekayim the asay without ever violating the los asay by putting chelet and tzitzis and leaving it in my drawer. But therefore, it's rot. Beishamai only holds this position because he holds chovas mana. But Beis Hillel says, no, I'm Dorish Smuchan, it's Mutter. And then he says, and by the way, Bishamai thinks this is true the other way around. You can't put linen on wool, can't put wool on linen. Beis Hillel says, mutter. Because he holds the drasha. So why did he make the machlokas about linen? Because by a linen beged, there is no way of not violating kilayim. So it's the best case to pick. Because the best way of being a mitzitzis is with tchelet, and tchelet has to be on wool, and that's why we picked that case, because that's definitional. This is Rashi. Who doesn't like this at all? Let's get out at least his basic argument. He says, what are you talking about? What's the point? Why?
Drasha is a drasha.
He says, everyone agrees that midaraisa it's mutter. Why? So look, like 10 lines down in Tosfos. Vikasha! Doha amrina and bereshia vamora filu mandalo darish muchin ma'almo mimishna torah darish. Well, what I said to Daniel before, which is, even people who hold that you don't derive halacha from juxtaposition, when do they? In which sefer chumash? Dvarim. In what sefer do these circum appear?
Dvarim.
Because as I already said, what parsha do they appear in?
Kitetze.
And what sefer is Kitetze in?
Dvarim.
Good, we've got it. Therefore,
why does that matter?
Because it's a constructed speech. And therefore, the Gemara says that even if you think that in other places in the Torah, the fact that psukim are juxtaposed might just be because that's how they happened. In Dvarim, which is a constructed speech, Moshe chose to put everything where it is. And therefore, there is significance to juxtaposition. And therefore, Tosfos says, what are you talking about? Everyone is Doresh Smuchen. Everyone is Doresh Smuchen. So how could you say that he holds biblically you can't do it? So, Tosfos' first attempt at an answer is V'yesh lomar d'ikacha tana b'nazir d'mafik mei rosho da'asei docha lo ta'asei utzem r'pishnim l'chidarava u'beit shamay svirlu ke'utana u'svirlu k'r'b'yudid lo dar smuchan el hecha d'muchach o mufne v'af agav da'asei docha lo zi lo sharitzit t'kilayim do efshir l'kayim shneim v'ikram mitzvot t'chilet lo yele b'tzemer. Said possibility one. He said, you know, you could defend it. How could you do it? Because you could say that this drasha is used for other things. Or that this drasha is used for other things. And yes, everyone holds that Dorshin Smuchen. But Rabbi Yehuda holds that you're only Dorish Smuchen if you have to. Right? If like it is really compelling, or mufna, which means that the pasuk isn't being used for any other drasha. But there are other drasha that are attached to these psukim. And therefore, if I wanted to, I could construct a position that says, this smuchin in Dvarim, you would not darsha. So he said, possibly one is, yeah, I could come up with a way of defending Rashi. And he goes through different things, right? He reminds us that this is connected to the Kesher Elyon sugya before. And then he notes that Rav Amram Gon paskins like Beis Shammai, which confuses him a lot. But he has another problem. Okay, let me summarize it for you, and then we'll maybe continue tomorrow. Or yeah, he says I have another problem. According to Rashi, how does Rashi defend the language of Potrin? By asserting what? That this Gemara goes according to the position that Tzitzis is Chovas Mana. Chovas Talas. Chovas Talas. Is that easier to talk about? Chovas Talas? Does that make it clear?
Sure.
Gavra versus Talas? Right? Person versus the clothing? Except Tosus said, "Ve'od dekaimalon kovat gavra." But Tosus says, "But wait a second, we paskin that it's a chova on the person." And what's Tosus' proof? Because what's the bracha? La lacha. Le'tateif, which sounds like the mitzvah is to wear it, to wear a talis with tzitzis. And if you hold that tzitzis is chovas gavra, then does the language of potrin make any sense?
No.
And if the language of potrin doesn't make sense, then we go back to Rashi, because according to Rashi, how dare you say that it's asher midaraisa mishum kilayim, and the language you use is so weak as to say, yeah, you don't have to put it on, which implies you could. Can you put it on according to Rashi, according to Beit Shammai? No, it's asher midaraisa. So what does Rabbeinu Tam say? This is the end of this Tosfos of Sadin. What does he say? Omer Rabbeinu Tam. Lekach Beis Rabbeinu Tam. Biblically, Beishamai holds. He agrees with the drasha. No, he agrees with Rabbeinu Tam. Says no, I disagree with Rashi. He thinks that everyone holds that midaraisa. Are you allowed to wear kilayim betzitzis?
Yes,
you are. So what's velopatri elamishum hanitame? And what is it saying? Why does it say exempt? Because biblically you're chayav. But because of these rabbinic concerns, meaning the ones that the Gemara continues to list, Chazal said, but you don't have to put it on. So why does it use the language of patur? Because Chazal removed the biblical obligation of tzitzis because of these concerns. Now, he solves one problem, but what problems now do you have to solve for Tosfos?
How could they
Yes, how could they do that? How did they just say, oh yes, biblically you are chayav in tzitzis, but don't bother putting it on because of ancillary problems? Okay, so far we've only outlined the basic position of Rashi and Tosfos. Rashi thinks that this is a biblical problem.
Isn't that how Derevans work though? Isn't that all they do?
No, but here they're telling you you're allowed to wear four-cornered garments without tzitzis. How can they do that? Sometimes they just say, don't do something. Here they're saying, you're allowed to wear a beged, which you're now violating Yisra Doraisa, because you're wearing a four-cornered garment without tzitzis, and Beis Shammai says, yeah, that's fine. How can he say that? So this is, we've gotten out some of it, but we still have a lot of problems in the sugya, because we still need to figure out, besides for this, why did the Chazal do this? How are they allowed to do this? And we have to deal with the stira in the Gemara between Rachva and Reish Lakish, because Reish Lakish says that you're only allowed to put kilayim betzitzis if you have to. Rachva sounds like it doesn't matter. You're always allowed to do it. And we have to deal with the question of what are you allowed to put on? What is the conversation here? Is it only about the tchelet strings? What about the white strings when you're already putting on tchelet? Can, according to Beis Hillel, are those allowed to be kilayim? We still have a lot to go here, but so far we've gotten out at least the main outline of Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam's position, but there's still more to go. We also have to deal with yet another question, which is, what is the connection between the statement of Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai and Rabbi Eliezer? Meaning, Rabbi Eliezer says you're not allowed to wear kilayim betzitzis. You're not allowed to wear kilayim betzitzis. Is that clarifying? Is that clarifying Beis Shammai's position? Or is that Beis Shammai's position? Meaning, according to Rashi rather, Beis Hillel thinks it's mutter midaraisa, Beis Shammai thinks it's asur midaraisa. So if it's asur midaraisa, do you need Rabbi Eliezer to say that it's asur midarabanan?
No.
So what must Rabbi Eliezer be doing? Qualifying who? Beis Hillel. Because Beis Shammai says it's asur midaraisa, and then what would your conclusion be from this Gemara? That Beis Hillel holds it's mutter midaraisa, but asur midarabanan. Beis Shammai holds it asur midaraisa. But according to Tosvos, it could be that Rabbi Eliezer is explaining Beis Shammai, meaning Beis Hillel holds its mutter midaraisa and midarabanan, and Beis Shammai is saying it's mutter midaraisa but also midarabanan. So we still need to get to that, right? This is why the sugya is very hard, even just in terms of reading. But continue reading Rashi in terms of this carefully, and we will pick up tomorrow. Okay.